Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. Now, if you've been listening recently, I've started to talk about Operation Barbarossa and the invasion of the Soviet Union by the Nazi regime. Now, this is such a huge topic of discussion, and it's something that's so fundamental, not just to the Second World War, but to the development of the 20th century itself. The outcome of Barbarossa decides pretty much everything from the destruction of Nazism to the rise of Soviet power. So it's worth us really taking quite a long time to discuss this. In the last podcast on this topic, I talked about how calculations by both Hitler and Stalin had created the conditions for Barbarossa in June 1941. The reality that both dictators had was that they saw the war as a kind of a succession of timetables. The Stalin and his inner circle assumed that the Nazis would be fighting in France for several years. When France falls after just under 2 months, Stalin is furious. He says, well, couldn't they have held out at least until Christmas? Couldn't they have held out for 6 months? And Stalin always bore a grudge against the French as a result, and thought that France really should be punished at the end of the Second World War along with the Germans for their weakness. Hitler thought that there would be an opportune time to invade the Soviet Union. Hitler was not ignorant to the fact that if the Soviet Union recovered its military strength from the Stalinist purges, then it would become a serious threat to Nazism. And he thought that a decision by Stalin to break off the Nazi-Soviet pact in the future and ally himself with Great Britain or the USA when it eventually joined the war would present Nazi Germany with an unwinnable scenario. Stalin had allowed German military attachés to travel beyond the Ural Mountains and see the new tank facilities, the new tank factories that were being built in the east, as a way of just reminding the Germans that if they did choose to invade the Soviet Union, that it wouldn't be easy. This has a different effect on the Nazis. It shows to Hitler that the clock is ticking, and it means that the timetable for invasion must be speeded up. Saying to his generals, and I quote Max Hastings here, "Now you see how far these people have already got. We must strike at once." Now, at the risk of slipping into kind of counterfactual histories and, or, you know, what might have happened if Stalin had invaded the West, there were obviously plans for every eventuality. Nearly every country has a range of different ideas and different kind of war games that they will put into practice in given different eventualities. But Stalin certainly had plans to invade Western Europe, and even in 1945 it was a distinct possibility that had the Americans not detonated the first atomic bomb, that Stalin may well have decided to press on through the rest of Germany into France and perhaps as far as the English Channel. And it's entirely possible that had D-Day failed, that a red flag would have been fluttering over Calais at some point. Stalin hoped for a moment of his own choosing to deal with Nazism, and he assumed this would be sometime in 1942. The core system of command and control within Soviet armies had been broken by the regime itself. Staff officers, divisional officers and brigade level officers had been executed and imprisoned in large numbers, and the level of initiative and the level of decision making throughout the Red Army had been fatally weakened. The ability to act autonomously, the ability to act decisively and to change plans on the battlefield had been all but annihilated, as there was far too much fear that anyone demonstrating skill and initiative might wind themselves up being arrested as a potential threat to the regime and executed. And so when the invasion happens, paralysed soldiers and officers are unable to fight back, and are in fact instructed not to fight back for almost the entirety of the first 48 hours. Hitler strikes when Germany has a comparative advantage in men, experienced men particularly, and munitions. The equipment that was created for the Red Army from the new Soviet tank factories being built, particularly the T-32 tank, would be devastatingly effective in the long run. But initially, the Red Army was unable to withstand the onslaught. Hitler's folly, as we know, was his inability to accurately estimate the ability of the Soviet Union to produce men and munitions, which was almost limitless. The failure of the Nazi regime to logistically plan and support for a long campaign, that it showed us that really Hitler wasn't considering the possibility of a long campaign. Hitler had fought lightning wars in Scandinavia, in Western Europe, in the Balkans, and they had all ended very, very quickly. The fear of a war of attrition doesn't seem particularly to have entered into his thinking, and even if it had done, Hitler is a figure who is famously opposed to the kind of bureaucratism that is essential in these kinds of conflicts. Stalin was not that character. Stalin relished, if anything, wading through the kinds of reports and documents and plans and orders that were required to keep a huge army on the move. The growth of the Wehrmacht, which had happened during 1940, and the arrival of new tanks and the looting of industrialised countries such as Czechoslovakia or France meant that the Wehrmacht was relatively well provided for. However, had it not been for the plunder of Western Europe and Central Europe, then the Wehrmacht in 1941 probably would have been woefully under-equipped. And when it comes to braving the icy weather of the Russian winter, it certainly is. So the hubris, the arrogance of Hitler, the inability to think ahead that seems to punctuate Hitler's thoughts is partly responsible here, and also the inability to envisage what a defeat might look like, or the possibility that following the lightning wars that have been dramatically successful across Europe, that Hitler could be defeated and might be flawed. These kinds of concepts don't really occur to him. And at this point, of course, he's surrounded by sycophants who are also encouraging him to take this point of view. Hitler had chosen to fight a war against a deeply brutalized society that had undergone famine, that had undergone the de-kulakization, mass killings of the 1930s, that had undergone the purges of the later 30s, that was dominated by a terrorist state and also by the vast gulag system. He wasn't fighting a country like Great Britain that had enjoyed a relatively tranquil interwar period and that had a strong pacifist movement up to the late 1930s and that had hoped to avoid war at all costs. So he was introducing to Russia, obviously he had planned killing of something approaching 30 million Russians in Western Russia from 1941 onwards, but he hadn't really bargained for the fact that an immensely brutalised people who had little to lose, who were fully aware of how much they could be made to suffer, were willing to fight back tooth and nail, and had been really hardened against the kinds of privations that Hitler was seeking to introduce. And between a rock and a hard place, between the Nazi and the Soviet regimes, were likely to embrace patriotism, were likely to embrace the great patriotic war for the motherland and fight to the death. This was something that the Germans find out in the first few days when they recall extraordinary stories of the bravery of the Ivans, as they put it, who are determined to defend every square inch when they actually come under fire from the Germans. And there are a number of memoirs of Nazi officers and men who are unnerved by the tenacity with which the Russians fight. And having seen the propaganda about the Winter War of 1939-40 against Finland, and generally the view of the Russians as being inferior Slavs, it comes as a quite of a wake-up call that they have invaded a country populated by people whom they now have quite a deal of respect for as fighters. Above all, Barbarossa would be a war of annihilation, a society like Germany that saw its culture as being one of its defining features and that saw itself as a bulwark against barbarism, is in the tragically ironic role as the barbaric power inflicting mass killing on almost unprecedented scales in the Soviet Union.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
By 1945, some 27 million Soviet citizens had died as a result of the war, some directly in combat, others as a result of famine, hunger, and some as a result of the Soviet Union, the Soviet government itself. But the level of mass killing in the Soviet Union as a result of Operation Barbarossa is unparalleled by any other single campaign in the war. One book I'd definitely recommend you read is Timothy Snyder's amazing account of Nazism and Stalinism, Bloodlands. And in it, he writes about Barbarossa. He says basically Hitler's fantasies collapse on contact with the Soviet Union. The idea that Lebensraum would happen, this doesn't occur, principally because it's impossible to tie down Soviet territory without having defeated all Soviet armies. The ability of the Soviet Union to create division after division, no matter how many armies and divisions are destroyed by the Wehrmacht, there are more to come. The hunger plan doesn't work. The plan to annihilate the entire population of Western Russia through starvation, this fails. The colonization of Western Russia, this doesn't happen. So Timothy Snyder argues that because of these failures, the Holocaust, or the final solution, or something that is going to be done with the Jews, Hitler hasn't quite worked out what, is taken from fourth place. There was a plan to finally deal with all of Europe's Jews after the successful conclusion of the war, and brought up to first place. The likes of Goering, Himmler and Reinhard Heydrich do this because as Hitler's fantasies fall apart and as things cease to work as they should do, as the plan ceases, the wheels fall off the plan, they want to make political capital, they want to appease the Führer and appeal to him, and therefore the escalation, the time scale, the time frame for the Holocaust is dramatically escalated. And the final solution is now designated to take place during the war, not after it. Of course, the Holocaust at this point is ongoing. And I don't want to go off and talk about the Holocaust in this podcast, particularly because obviously it is an incredibly complicated discussion and merits its own, many of its own podcasts. But as it pertains to Barbarossa, the Holocaust had been ongoing since 1939 and the invasion of Poland, and it had obviously dramatically escalated with the introduction of Einsatzgruppen to the Soviet Union and the killing actions of not just the Einsatzgruppen but also and the SS, but also the Wehrmacht itself. But the plans for the final solution, the systematized mass killing of every Jew in Europe, become far more part of Nazi plans and designs from obviously the Wannsee Conference in early January 1942. And Timothy Snyder says that this is a function of or a product of the failure to conquer the Soviet Union effectively. What would things have looked like had that effective conquest of the Soviet Union taken place? Well, the Generalplan Ost, the creation of and the colonization of the East, would have possibly involved the shipping of Europe's Jews to the far side of the Urals to be worked to death. Certainly there was a plan by Hitler at this time to, in whatever way possible, remove all Jews from Europe. Perhaps whether this had meant mass murder through gassing, or whether it had meant mass murder through forced labour, or whether it had meant simply the gradual reduction and elimination of the Jewish population through what the Nazis would have thought of as kind of natural wastage of harsh conditions, illness, forced work, and limited calories. We don't really fully know, but it's definitely a position that you can support and defend, that Hitler had a plan to have some final action towards the Jews following the successful conclusion of the war. So anyway, on the 2nd of May 1941, when the Soviet Union was being discussed by the Nazi high command and Hitler's ministers, Herbert Back, and originally one of the agriculture ministers for the regime, discussed how the German army would be fed. At a meeting, it was announced that, firstly, the war could only be continued if the entire Wehrmacht was fed from Russia in the third year of the war. And this meant that it would be necessary to take what we, Germany, needs out of the country, and there could be no doubt that many millions of people would die of starvation. In another one of Timothy Snyder's excellent books, Black Earth, which again is well worth getting, the idea of Lebensraum, he analyses in a quite an interesting way. This is not just a physical space. Lebensraum, living space, is all about, in his view, resources. And the conquest of Russia was about creating an economic Lebensraum, a resources Lebensraum, where there is literally room for the German population to have a particularly high standard of living at the same time as fighting a world war. So if your people won't be forced to sacrifice their living standards and your army is fed to a particular standard, that means that somebody else's people will have to give up their food, and those were going to be the Russian people. Timothy Snyder quotes a famed sort of aphorism at the time, to be as wealthy as an American. And the American standard of living was seen to be a kind of benchmark to which Germans should, in Hitler's view, aspire. And to be as wealthy and as well-fed as an American was, in Hitler's view, again, something that could be achieved through the starvation of Russia, making it not just an invasion, but an economic strategy too. And in a way, this helps make sense of economic policy in Germany prior to the outbreak of the Second World War. Hitler was no economist, and he had no time for economic thinking. Particularly, he was thought himself to be the only intellectual, but was a profound anti-intellectual, and thought that there was that economics was kind of a no-brainer, really. When he brought about his various works projects to put the unemployed back to work, he didn't see it as part of a strategy of Keynesian reflation. The workers on the German autobahns weren't paid sufficiently well enough to reflate the economy or put more money back into the economy. Instead, he thought that work was a kind of a racial practice, and that Aryan men put to work would be kind of morally reforged and toughened up and would be ready for war, and that work itself, labour, was part of the process of reforging the national psyche, getting the shirkers lift a finger, and also to give men the kind of determination and national pride in the knowledge that they were working towards a greater racial goal. So how did Hitler plan to really deal with Germany's economic problems? Well, his idea really was a racial economics of plunder. The ultimate solution to Germany's racial problems was going to be Lebensraum and expansion, and that Lebensraum would mainly be found in Eastern Europe. The war in Russia was cast in Manichaean terms, a struggle between good and evil, light and dark, a battle for civilization itself, and the German army on Russian soil would be there to ensure that the German people essentially survived, and the failure of their mission would be really the downfall of the Reich itself and the downfall of Aryan Germany. General Erich Höfner said, "The war with Russia is a vital part of the German people's fight for existence. It is the old fight of the German against the Slav, the defence of European culture against the Muscovite Asiatic flood and the repulse of Jewish Bolshevism. This war must have as its goal the destruction of today's Russia, and for this reason it must be conducted with unprecedented harshness. Every clash, from conception to execution, must be guided by an iron determination to annihilate the enemy completely and utterly." So it was this ideological approach to the invasion and colonization of Russia that would turn this into a war of annihilation. And it would mean that this annihilation and destruction would be revisited on Germany with unprecedented and unparalleled ferocity when the Red Army crossed over into the Reich in 1945. Anyway, we'll continue this in short order. Do check out the Explaining History Facebook page. Some interesting things happening at the moment, some interesting conversations, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks, bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.